Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
A while back, it was a couple of weeks ago, but time has a very, very strange elastic component. I can't tell you. It could have been a year ago. It could have been 3 months or 6 weeks. Either way, we chatted with Rabbi Ricky Seif. They contacted us to come into studio and to talk about the allegations, some allegations that had emerged about sexual abuse back in the 1980s. We had the conversation here in studio with Rabbi Ricky Seif. A lot of you then downloaded the podcast, listened to that. Some of you came back to us, and we were wondering what the update has been, or if there is any update and progress on this difficult subject. Joining us this morning, Rabbi Ricky Seif, General Director of the South African Jewish Board of Education. A very good morning. I'm hoping you're well.
Howard, good morning. Good to be with you again. Can you hear me clearly?
Nice and clear. Absolutely perfect. So when last we spoke, it really was at the beginning of the process. And one of the reasons you wanted to chat to us is that you wanted people to be aware of it and also to know about it in case there were other cases, and if there were other, there was information that would come that people could report, come back to you on to really further or broaden that investigation. Take us through what's happened since then.
So yeah, thanks, Howard. I think from the beginning, and you're right, I mean, SABG's approach from day one really has been to be transparent, to come out and really tackle this in the right way, the moral way, and just really to support the victims and do the right things. So now that's been our process, and that's been our guiding light since we began this process. So we sent out that letter. We published it broadly. We sent it to our current stakeholders, parents, staff. We sent it to our entire alumni network around the world. And the response was, I think, very encouraging. I think people supported the board's stance and really have been very supportive throughout. Subsequent to the letter going out in relation to the abuse case that we actually dealt with, we got a number of other complainants who came through, also affected other victims by the same abuser. And it's really been quite a difficult and long process. SABG's met individually with each of these victims, sometimes on multiple occasions, multiple conversations, getting affidavits. It's really been quite a difficult emotional process. Obviously, for the victims, it's a very traumatic thing coming forward. Many of these individuals had not spoken about this case in 40 years. So very traumatic for them to kind of reawaken this thing. And for SABG as well, difficult dealing with it and really trying to hold the space of being practical and moving it forward as well as being empathetic. It's been a trying couple of weeks.
So in terms of the investigation itself, have more people come forward?
So like I say, there have been other victims who've come forward. The criminal case is almost an independent process which is underway, and unfortunately that's not in our hands. That's in the hands of the local authorities. But other victims have come forward to SABG. And what we've done since then is with the victims, we've met with the other victims who've come forward. We've offered them actually psychosocial support for those who want it. And we've recently now, we put out a letter yesterday that SABG's actually launched an internal investigation with an independent forensic abuse specialist who's going to be really trying to dig back into the 80s and see what happened and, really just dig into this case. So we're really throwing everything we can at this case.
Are the victims that have come forward, are they centered around the same alleged perpetrators, or are they completely different? Have you come across completely different cases that might or might not have been a problem?
So the vast majority have related to the same perpetrator, particularly in incidents that happened in the hostel at the time in the 1980s, particularly 1982 to about 1984, around that time. There were other people who came forward about historical abuse cases that SABG had previously dealt with. There was a former perpetrator by the name of Yanni Janssen. A number of cases came forward with that. SABG actually dealt with that a number of years ago. And a few people who just really, you know, sharing experiences of their own through their school lives, which were difficult experiences, not per se out and out abuse, but people really used it as an opportunity to come forward and express things that they've been through in the past that were unpleasant, you know, but unrelated to this particular abuse case.
I found it very, very difficult, thankfully for me, I'm not involved in this investigation, but I keep wondering, having been somebody at more or less that age in the 1980s, not at King David, but it was a very, very different time, and it was a very strange time. And I, you know, when you speak about this expert looking back through the, you know, through history, how do you differentiate 2026 from the 1980s, where I know I shouldn't be flippant about it, but I actually feel to some extent everybody was abused, and we weren't, but it was just a very, very different and strange time. How do you discount the decade from abuse?
So that's a great question, Howard, and there's no doubt you spot on. It was a different day and age. Nobody spoke.
Mm-mm.
And I think that's really been the biggest challenge. Victims didn't speak. Parents didn't speak. It was a time of silence. So, you know, what really seems to be playing out is that you've got this reality of abuse taking place, which, of course, doesn't make it okay. The issue is that nobody's talking about it, and therefore it remains hidden, it remains covered up. And a lot of the victims that they're coming out now is because they've kind of, a lot of them have bottled it up over all these decades, and now it's coming out and they recognizing the impact it may have had on their lives. Other victims have actually moved on and have really, you know, put it behind them. Some of them have used it to propel them to greater things. So all the victims have different responses, emotional responses. But it's true, it was a different day, it was a different age. Abuse happened, and we just want to make sure that on our side we did everything we, you know, we could according to the book, and there was nothing untoward on SABG's side, and making sure that we, you know, really for us, one of the main reasons, Howard, besides for supporting the victims, that we've really dug into this, is to just send a message to our current stakeholders, actually, to highlight abuse, and that we will not tolerate it in the current day and age. You know, what happened in the 80s is regrettable, terribly sad, terribly hard for the victims. But we want to assure our current parents that, A, you know, our schools are safe, and we want to make sure that we are keeping our students safe no matter what. And so we're using it as a positive to really propel us into doing the right thing in the current times.
What are the systems in place today that governs this area? So now let's fast forward to 2026. Somebody applies for a position as a teacher at the school or the schools. What measures are in place today?
So I think on the employment side, it's also a different day and age, and thankfully we've progressed tremendously. Subsequent to that, the Janne Jansen incident and the board's investigation into those matters a number of years ago, a couple of things were put in place. So on hiring, on employment, we do background checks, police clearance checks, sexual offender checks on our employees. We actually do those even for current employees every couple of years. We have a mandatory prevention of sexual abuse policy for our staff, which there's compulsory training every year, and every staff member actually has to sign that on joining SABG. And then we have the child protection side of it, where we really try and encourage our children to report things, to speak up. We have a lot of abuse training in our schools. And SABG actually, thankfully, a number of months ago, partnered with an organization called The Guardian, which are really the foremost experts in school safeguarding, to relook at our policies, relook at our reporting structures, a huge amount of staff training. So we actually invest very heavily in this area. And I don't think, believe truly, that you can ever say you're going to completely weed out abuse, but we try and make it very hard and very uncomfortable for any potential abuser to be in the system, and to empower our kids to be able to speak up, I think. So it's a completely different world to what it was in the 80s. Thank God.
And should, God forbid, a case start to emerge, or a kid or parent report something that they're uncomfortable with, what kind of process gets followed?
So the when it comes to abuse reporting, I think the first point of call is really a trusted adult. Sometimes it comes through other people, through peers, but usually it comes through a trusted adult. So we try and encourage the children to have a person that they feel comfortable with. Could be a teacher, could be the social worker. Our traditional processes are it'll go through them to the head of school and then escalate it. If it's a staff member, there'll be disciplinary hearings, and that person, at least, now particularly, we've really clamped down on all staff, letting them know that it won't be tolerated. And just the hard part is making sure that the child feels safe and can really, be safe in our environment. So that's usually the process. It starts with a trusted staff member and gets escalated through our management team.
Just as a matter of interest, only because I'm not particularly knowledgeable about this, does this type of sexual abuse typically take place in a high school, in a girls' high school, girls, boys, primary school? I'm not talking about King David. I'm just talking in general. Where are our kids most vulnerable, if that is even the case?
So it's a great question, and I think from my experience, not that I'm an expert either, but from what I've seen over the years, is it doesn't have a particular shape, it doesn't have a particular place, it doesn't have a particular demographic. It really is far spread, and often the abusers and the people who are groomers are really they're out to find children, and they'll find it in any way that they can. And I think that's the difficulty. I think the one commonality often, Howard, is it's a trusted person. Very
Well,
often,
that's
it's a
and
person
that's
who is
yeah.
trusted, who is charismatic, who likes the child, who puts a lot of effort into the child and builds up a relationship of trust. And therefore, the children are often confused as to how to deal with this because this is a trusted person, and they go through a huge range of emotion, trying to grapple with what's happening to them. And that's because it comes from usually a trusted place. And we find that even when it's abuse within a family, it could be it's a cousin, it's a sibling, it's somebody in a family who's abusing another family member, a child. It's usually a trusted person, and that's what often creates such emotional turmoil within the victims.
Yeah, because it's very, very much about the perpetrator, and the one thing that I have understood as well, and I just want to know if that's been your experience as well, is that it is normally vulnerable kids that are vulnerable for one reason or another.
It does seem to be a pattern like that, although I don't think it's entirely limited to that. It really
Right.
could be anybody,
Anyone.
but it is often the child who's vulnerable, a child who low self-esteem, a child who's going through difficulties at home is often a softer target. I think in this particular case, the sadness was that many of these victims were students in the hostel. So you people away for children away from home, living away from their families, and unfortunately, really was a terrible situation of a perpetrator who was a groomer, taking advantage of boys in the hostel environment.
As unpleasant and as difficult as this is to manage and to navigate, are you comfortable with the process? Is there anything that you are less happy with? Or is this going as best as you could, as it could?
So I must say, Howard, I think it's been challenging, far more challenging than I anticipated. But I really believe SABG is throwing everything at this from a resource point of view, from a timing point of view. We really are. I don't think organisationally we could be doing more. This was an incident that happened 44 years ago, and we really are just investing so much time and effort and making sure we're doing right by these victims, being as empathetic as we possibly can. And, I think we're really doing the best we can. I think there's an element of tremendous appreciation from many of the victims for how we're dealing with
That's
it and how
amazing.
transparent
That's
we're being.
amazing.
There obviously are victims who are, not as happy and really are looking for quick turnaround times and for things to be far quicker than they have been. But I suppose that's just the way this situation goes with the heightened emotions. But as long as SABG, we feel we're doing the right thing. We really are investing tremendous amount of time and effort and financial resources into this. So, we can put up our heads on our pillows at night and know that we're doing the right thing.
Well,
So,
yeah. I mean, I'm going to get really shouted at for this insensitive comment, and I just hope that, none of my family are listening because they'll shout first. But the reality is, how can you expect a quick turnaround time if you've waited 44 years?
Yeah, fair comment.
Okay,
fair
comment, I don't expect you to answer that.
We try nonetheless. We're trying as best as we can. We really are. And
I don't doubt
just hope
it.
That it's a good outcome for the victims and for us.
Yeah, and that's really the goal, is to try and just address the past as best as you can. And I have no doubt that it's absolutely perfection here is just not an option. It's a set of circumstances that happened that is terrible, horrific, all of these terrible things. But you can never go back and relive that. It's just a matter of doing it, I guess, in a way possible. And as you said, sending a message to the families today of children at the school, to teachers, to parents, that this is just simply not something that will be tolerated.
Yeah, exactly.
Before I let you go, message to parents, to children, to people who might still have not come forward, your message to them?
So I think for if there are any other victims, really the window is closing. We just practically can't extend the window for much longer. Mm. So I really would encourage, if there are still any other victims, please do come forward now. We can't extend this. The process takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. It really will become difficult if victims continue to come forward in perpetuity. So I really would like to encourage everyone to come forward now, as if they can and if they wish to. But also want to send a message to our current parents and the community at large, Howard, if I may, that I think really it's important to look for signs in children and the people you love. To really keep your finger on the pulse. If there's any behaviors that change or things that make you concerned, don't turn a blind eye. It's important that we're all very vigilant around the area of abuse and don't take it lightly. Of course, not every time a child is sad or a person in the family is sad, they're being abused. But if there's a worrying pattern, of course, and if there's anything that really makes a parent or a teacher concerned about a child, rather do something about it than turn a blind eye.
Absolutely. That is Rabbi Ricky Seif talking to us about the investigation, the South African Jewish Board of Education, and encouraging people to come forward. That window will close. So if you want to do so, now is the time.